From Radio Sausalito in beautiful Sausalito, California, I'm Mitchell Field, and you are on the field trip. Welcome to The Field Trip, a few minutes of conversation each week with some of the most interesting people in the Bay Area and Marin County. I talk to artists and writers, actors, directors, musicians, some of the characters who make the Bay Area a fun and a fabulous place to live. So let's get right to it. Last weekend, I was lucky to be invited to the opening night of a wonderful play at one of my favorite Bay Area theaters, the San Francisco Playhouse. The play was called Abigail's Party, and it's set in London in the 1970s, and aside from the terrific script and the great acting, what really impressed me was how accurate the English accents were. Nothing is worse than those dreadful Dick Van Dyke lines in Mary Poppins, if you know what I'm talking about. Of course, professional actors have often studied accents in drama school, but professional theater and film companies often call in what's known as a dialect coach to be sure that the actor's dialogue sounds authentic. Well, in the Bay Area, the go-to dialect coach is my guest on today's field trip, Lynn Sofer. Lynn Sofer has been an instructor of acting, speech, dialects, and text work for almost 25 years. As a dialect coach, she helps actors prepare for auditions and coaches them while working on a role, and she also instructs singers and musicians in cabaret. She's worked on over 200 theater and film projects, including those at Berkeley Rep, ACT, Seattle Rep, well, you get the idea. And she was a dialect coach for the world premiere of Moises Kaufman's The Laramie Project, and she also coached the dialects for Jonathan Mosconi's Nicholas Nickleby at Cal Shakes a few years ago, another show that I really enjoyed. As an actor, she's also appeared on many of those same stages. She was in the San Jose Rep production of The Dresser, and other stage credits include Enchanted April, Rabbit Hole, and Heartbreak House at Berkeley Rep, on which I was lucky enough to understudy a couple of roles. She's also a busy voice actor, and she can regularly be heard on radio and television commercials. She's also known for her generosity and dedication to those in the theater world who have been ill and in need. In 2011, she was awarded the Lucy Jordan Award, which is given to honor any members of the extended theatrical family who goes above and beyond the call of duty. The award was presented to her by her union, Actors Equity Association, of which she's been a member since 1981. Let's find out more about this interesting woman. Please welcome to the field trip, Lynn Sofer. Welcome, Lynn.
Thank you so much, Mitchell, and thank you for that rather lovely introduction. I'm very flattered and feeling a little embarrassed.
Well, not at all. Let me congratulate you first on your work on Abigail's Party. Those accents were practically flawless.
Well, we're always thrilled to hear that. The actors and I work very, very hard to try and make that come true. And I'm so delighted, because that was a challenging show.
Sure is. They were sort of soft Southern English accents. They weren't Cockneys. They weren't what's known as RP, right?
Well, Sue is kind of RP. She's middle class. And then you have Angela, Beverly, and Lawrence, who are doing that estuary, that in-between. And then Tony, the sort of quiet one, the lout who doesn't speak very much, is almost Cockney. So it's three levels of different London dialects.
Yes, he's got the footballer accent, doesn't he?
Yes.
The soccer lout.
Right, exactly. I could see him at one of those dust-ups. And Sue is speaking with something closer to regular RP because she's come from the middle class. It's her suburb that these people are now slowly moving into as they climb out of the London area.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, tell me a bit about your background. Where were you raised and where did you go to school?
Well, I was brought up in New York City, actually, and I went to college in New York City. And then I came out here in the 70s to study at ACT, which is where I was first introduced to speech work, which I just loved. It was part of my training that I adored. And my teacher out here, Ann Lauder, who is no longer with us, encouraged me when I went back to New York to study with her teachers. And by the end of the 70s, I came back to ACT to teach and started coaching.
Tell me a bit about voice acting.
Voice acting?
Yeah.
Depends on what it's for. If you're talking about, stuff like you do on the radio and commercials and things like that.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting thing because, as you know, I described it recently for somebody. It's like doing theater for the blind, because with your voice and intention of what you're saying, you have to paint these pictures and create the world and bring your audience into it and have them get it when they don't have the visuals you get on TV or film or in the theater. And it's that wonderful thing in acting about whatever you really do, we will get. So if I'm really trying to reach you in this conversation, my intentions will come through more clearly. Voice acting has all kinds of little things that you learn. For example, if it's commercial, I was just explaining this to somebody recently. In a commercial, there's always a hero. Usually it's the product. So when you talk about it, you say, here we are. And for example, you talked about, this is the Field Trip, which is kind of the hero of this show, the name of the show. And you lifted that when in the introduction you said, this is Mitchell Field and we're on the field trip. And you sort of said, look at the hero. And that's one of the things you learn about voice acting.
Did I sell it right?
You did. You sold it beautifully. Well, you're a professional at this. And many of us learn this by instinct and by ear rather than study.
Well, tell me this. How does it work when a film or a theater company calls you in? What's the procedure?
Well, it's an interesting process, and it's always similar, but always slightly different, like acting any role is or any play is. The first thing is I confer with the director to find out what their vision is. I look at the script to see what is leaping off the page at me. For example, originally with Abigail's Party, we were talking about this being this estuary English, the kind of London suburb, not RP, not standard British, but also not as low as Cockney.
Right.
And then I picked up the script and I came back to the director and said, ooh, I think this is three different levels of a London dialect. And I think it shows in the text, there's all of this jockeying for status and position that I could see. And so we agreed on that. And then I research. There are dialect materials and books, but the internet has changed everything.
Has it?
Yeah, oh, it's so wonderful. Instead of sitting home trying to record things off of a movie on TV, I'm just sending people links where they can listen to real speakers. YouTube is invaluable for any theater, especially a small theater that can't afford a dialect coach. So I do the research, I get the sound changes, I get internet links so that they can listen to real speakers, I send this stuff to the actors, or I present it the first day of rehearsals, and usually the first day we go over all the sound changes. And then I listen to a read-through and I start telling people what need adjusting. And I work individually with actors throughout the process, trying to help them find their way naturally into the dialect. One of the most important things with a dialect is for it to seem like you just naturally speak that way.
Sure.
It shouldn't seem stuck on or worn like a mask. I always say to people, it's the costume of your mouth. And we've all been to the theater where somebody looked like, I just got this costume today, instead of, I live in these period clothes, or I live, this is natural for
right.
me. And so that's what a dialect should be. It should be part of your life as a character, not some fake thing you're putting on while you're trying to act all those darn scenes.
Well, with British accents, I wonder how hard it is to get people to understand the social politics of what they're saying.
That's very interesting for you to point that out, because I consider myself as a dialect coach. I've already mentioned it. I'm a facilitator. I'm helping the actors find their way in. And one of the big things is there's idiomatic usage of language, there's phrases, there's different things that are unique to every culture and every society. And I have to kind of ferret that out and then help an actor understand it. For example, Angela in Abigail's Party does a lot of those sort of, it came kind of from Cockney, those little tags where you say something like, oh, that's rather lovely, isn't it? And they don't mean, that's rather lovely, don't you think so? It's just sort of the way kids nowadays say, you know, at the end of everything. And if you have an American script and a foreign actor picks it up and they say, I'm going to the mall, you know, it would seem artificial. But if they just go by the words, they would think they needed to do that. So you have to help them go, oh, that's a tag. That's just general agreement. So we have to ferret those out about the British. How do the Brits use language? And what does it imply? And I've kind of specialized in this over the years, because I've actually been coaching. You said 25, it's 35. So I help actors and I say, I think that's an idiomatic use of that. Let's look that up. I think that implies this. When I started, I bought a bunch of books. I've collected books over the years about British English and phrases. But the internet just changed that whole thing.
Sure.
It's all in the Google search strip. Yeah, language is changing. It's really interesting. I was, when we were working on Abigail's Party, I listened to Prince William and Prince Harry. And your generation, Prince Charles, speaks with not just RP, or standard British. He speaks a slightly advanced RP. He seems very stuffy. And if you listen to William, he speaks very good standard British, but more relaxed. And you listen to Harry, who knows he's never going to be King of England, he speaks an estuary. It is fashionable to speak less posh. So these two brothers, exactly the same class, speak differently. One is doing the speech he knows he's going to need as the King of England, and the other is doing contemporary London speech so he can fit in with the other young people. There's so much emotionally involved with how we speak and how we sound. It's like when a mother says to a child, oh, Billy, come on in here. And then when she's angry and suddenly she says, William Victor, you get in here.
Sure.
And she goes formal. We do this magic trick constantly. We play all kinds of roles. I'm always telling that to actors. You can do anything and be real because we're playing roles all the time in real life.
Well, I'm having so much fun talking with dialect coach Lynn Sofer. She does turn out to be as interesting as I thought she was going to be, that I'll make this into two episodes. So this will be part one, and you can hear part two next week. Well, thanks for joining me today on The Field Trip. I welcome your views and comments on the show, as well as your suggestions for future guests. My email address is mitchellfield@radiosausalito.org. The theme music you hear behind me is the tune Superjet, with the fabulous Marin Sax man Noel Jukes up front. It's from the recording The Noel Jukes Quartet featuring Matt Clark. Please remember that The Field Trip can be heard Wednesdays at the top of every hour at 1610 on your AM radio dial in Southern Marin, countywide on Wednesdays at noon on cable channel 26, anytime on your computer at radiosausalito.org, and 24 hours a day as a free podcast from the iTunes Store. If you liked today's show, please tell your friends, and if you didn't, well, please tell your enemies. So till next time, this is Mitchell Field saying goodbye, good luck, and see you next week.